Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 249. My conversation with Houston-based actor, director, producer, Rebecca Bernstein. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Do you guys know that they have podcasts on Audible? Gosh, there are so many options here. I gotta check these out. But first, I should finish recording this intro. Audible is available on most of the devices in your home, certainly in mine. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to download the app and sign up to get your free audiobook today. Today's other sponsor is my company, PodcastCadet.com. My husband Chris and I run the company, PodcastCadet.com. We provide advice and production help to any podcaster who needs it. We can give you a little push, or we can help you with the production of all of your podcast episodes. Contact us now at podcastcadet.com and use code YBY20 to get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. This week, I talked to Rebecca Bernstein. Since March 2020, Rebecca has built a worldwide community of performers online with Zoom Shakespeare Productions. Since their first reading, Zoom Shakespeare Productions has done over 45 virtual performances with actors from around the world. In our conversation, Rebecca and I talk about Shakespeare, obviously, how much we miss live theater, and COVID's effect on our creative drive. This is a great conversation about creating art and pulling something positive out of the darkness. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 249. Rebecca Bernstein and building community through Zoom Shakespeare. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
My parents like to tell the story that I, and there's several of these little moments, but one of the first was I was in pre-K, and my mom got a call from a very concerned pre-K teacher, and she told my mom, you know, we were going around the circle at circle time, and we were asking all the kids what they wanted to be, and, you know, most of the kids said they wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer, and Rebecca were actually really concerned. She wants to be a mermaid. And like, I mean, that could have told anyone right there that I would be a performer. Of course my mom found it totally entertaining, because like, that's not something to be worried about, but it was little performer Rebecca Bernstein brain was like, yeah, I don't want to be a lawyer or a doctor, I want to be a mermaid. I know. I would say you have a 3-year-old. You could probably like totally hear one of the kids in his class or whatever saying that.
I think it's insane that the teacher was so like worried about it. Like, I know. Oh my God.
And then, you know, there's some other things like I was an interesting little kid. Like the time when my kindergarten teacher asked us, because we were doing the dramatization, because school plays, which aren't really a thing anymore, were really popular in the 90s. Like, every kid had to get up there and do a line. And we were doing Old Mother Hubbard, and the teacher asked, does anybody have a dog costume? I didn't, but for some reason, the 5-year-old me was like, I want to be the dog. So I raised my hand, and my parents proceeded to buy me a dog costume so that I could play the role of the dog.
I can't wait. Like the best part is the conversation between the teachers. Like, I can't wait to have those conversations where they're like, what do you mean? She said you had a dog costume. Well, we don't, but I guess we'll get one.
And the fact that my parents, didn't say, Rebecca, you need to go back to school and say you don't have one, that you were lying. My parents were like, well, here we go. Guess we're going to get her a dog costume.
Well, they were fine with the dog costume. I mean, once you had gotten over the early aspirations of being a mermaid, they're like, well, at least it's a dog. I mean, it's at least it's a land-based animal now. You know, let's work
that actually
towards.
Exists.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm open to mermaids. I haven't seen the whole ocean. There's a lot of it.
True.
Yeah, I don't know.
And like every culture has their own idea of a mermaid. You know, a half woman, half fish. It does make you wonder, you know,
yeah.
Maybe at some point, oh, right, it was just a manatee that a horny guy thought was a woman. Oh, well.
Hey, good looking manatees, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
Not a manatee.
I'd say they're adorable.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? We just don't know. Let that imagination continue. Don't squelch it. You are all right. If you want to be a mermaid, perfect. You can do it, kids.
Absolutely. Or a dog, even if you don't have a costume.
So were the plays but, you know, were doing in school just the, like, everybody had to do them kind of situation?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Everybody had to do them? Wow.
Like, I remember Harrod Elementary here in Houston, Texas. You know, I don't think they do this at many elementary schools anymore, but I think that I remember it being a thing in the 90s where, like, you would do your school play and, like, every class, maybe it would be, like, the fifth grade school play or the kindergarten school play, and every class would do a little presentation. I don't know if every kid had to speak, but, like, at least, like, a handful of kids in the class. Isn't that
so,
interesting?
Like, the whole
did you have
did
that
it?
Stuff?
No, I did not. This did not happen to me. But I didn't grow up in Houston. Houston's a big old place.
True.
I'm from a suburb of Boston. There were very few people. I did theater, but more as a, like, after school hangout scenario than mm-hmm. it really was like a, you know, organized school thing. I mean, I remember being a brown crayon in kindergarten, but that's different.
Well, there you go. That was your dog in the, that was your dog costume.
Well, yeah.
Was the brown crayon.
Sure, sure. But I don't think, like, other classes saw my kindergarten play. And it wasn't as big a deal. Like, I didn't do theater again until high school. And I didn't go to the regular public high school. I went to the private school, the private all-girls school. So then we did theater at the boys' school to meet boys. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know?
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think, you know, those little early moments of kindergarten and stuff, like getting that kind of, and then, you know, hearing laughter and applause because of what you're doing on stage, like for some kids, I think is terrifying. And then for others, like myself, was just kind of invigorating. And I was like, oh my God, that's because of what I'm doing? Wow, I like that feeling. I mean, I'm the youngest of three. So the youngest tend to be the more dramatic ones.
Sure, sure. Well, you have to work harder to get attention. By the time a person has three kids, they're just like, yeah, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Where's the baby? I don't know. It's all right.
Oh, yeah.
I find that a lot with my friends of multiple children.
Or they'll get the one who's slightly older to ask. To say how the baby's doing. It's like, what's the baby doing? Yeah. He's trying to walk, Mom. Oh, okay.
Do you want to watch? She'll be fine.
My sister apparently...
Good.
Apparently one time told my mom that she didn't want to tell her what I was doing anymore. You know, because Mom was like, okay, well, what's Becca doing? And my sister, who's 3 years older than me, was like, I don't want to tell you anymore. At three, you know.
Wow.
I know.
That's some intense defiance and very, very smart, the older one. Oh, man.
Okay, she's a lawyer now. So there you go.
Yeah, well, very smart. So was your school always very theatrical? Like, did you do plays every single year all the way through?
So at Harrod, which is public, I want to say they did, like, it was kind of like that, where, like, they would have like a presentation, I think once a year, and it would be like a group of kids from every class. From what I remember. I mean, it was like, it wasn't like, you know, a whole play. It would just be like, you know, 5 minutes of kids acting out a story. And I think it was just for parents and other staff members. Not so much in front of other kids, but yeah, that's interesting.
Huh. So you were involved in this kind of thing. Did you, since it was so regular to you, did you think of it as like exciting and fun, or was it just like another class?
Oh, that was my favorite part. And like I, my parents put me into like HITS, which is here in Houston, and it's like a musical theater program. And I did that for a while. So I was doing theater after school. Like it was part of my life. And like, I think I discovered that passion really, really early on.
Tell me about it was musical the best part. Theater.
Oh gosh. Well, my mom's a singer. I am someone who's been blessed / cursed with a love for musical theater and not a great ear. So I will sing along to that, to the entire score of Les Mis. It might not be great though. That's the issue. But you know, when you're 8 years old,
yeah.
But when you're 8 years old, it's like, sure, put my kid in a musical. And that was really cool too. I think music was something that I'm better at it now than I was, but like there's some people who can do all three, you know, sing, act, dance. I definitely now in my 30s have the acting down. but yeah, I mean, I loved it even so. Like, I just loved doing it and like dancing and, you know, being part of a big musical, and the budget there was really cool.
Hey, that's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Like sometimes these kids theaters get more money than like a community theater with people working really hard.
Well, yeah, because you can show off cute little kids and people are like, I'll give money to the kids. They give more money to those programs than they do to their public school system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's an odd scenario, the way money gets parsed out. You know, sometimes it's not really for the people who need it. But that being said, a big budget on musical theater is always fun. And then it means also that you have really great teachers. Did you stick with that program for a while? Or were you like, no, I really want to get into straight plays and acting?
I think straight plays and acting seemed more like interesting to me. So I did a lot of Main Street Theater kids, their kids program. They had a great kids program in the early 2000s, late 90s. And I did a lot of stuff with them. They did, I was in like, I mean, talking about Shakespeare, I played Aegeus, the father, the evil father in Midsummer Night's Dream. When I was about 12, they do great work over there. Basically putting, you know, I think they start at like 4 and then go up to like 18 and they put kids in, you know, I think it's mostly straight plays, but they do like a rehearsal performance. I think it's 6 weeks, maybe it used to be at least. But yeah, that was my first exposure to doing Shakespeare. Middle school is, I was like 12-ish. Of course, you know, every girl wants to be Titania, the fairy. And they're like, here, Aegeus, Hermia's evil father. And you know what? Like, that was the beginning of me as a character actor.
Hey, why not, right? Fill in the character you can play. You can play any role.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter what the gender or age, as long as you can find your way into developing a character, right?
Exactly.
So you got really involved. What was it called? Main Street Theater? That's really great that you were able to, you know, get involved. And I love this idea that they've got kids as young as 4, you know, going up and being on stage. I think the reason why they usually put kids in musical theater is because they think they're going to like more easily jive with music than, you know, trying to act and understand this kind of stuff. But I think that some people just kind of have it in them. Like, I mentioned earlier that my kiddo and I watch a lot of Pixar movies. Mm-hmm. He literally quotes them, like, constantly. So, like, after we watch the movie, he acts out the whole movie in front of me multiple times. Like,
he has a performer gene, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure. I mm-hmm. mean, though, I mean, I would say that every dude I've ever met ever quotes movies. So I'm not going to
turn
a performer just yet. But there are moments that he does that are, like, the full emotional, like, situation, and you're like, what, how are you doing this? Like, I don't know how he understands it, but maybe emotion trumps music, you know? Maybe they're like, oh, I understand what's going on in this scene because I understand what the emotion is, you know? I don't know.
What's his favorite
Pixar movie?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a hard one. We usually go for, like, what's ever current. So we've been watching Soul a lot, but
okay, but
I would say the movie that we've watched the most of all of them is probably Toy Story. He's a big Woody fan. And also there's four of them, so it's easier. You can watch all of them and not feel like, oh my God, the same movie over and over, right?
Yeah.
But he's into those characters. That's probably his main character that he does all the time. He'll do Woody.
I don't know what their recipe is, Pixar, but I don't know how they can dish it out again and again and make 4-year-olds cry and 40-year-olds cry. Like, no joke, I will go see a Pixar movie when it comes out, and I will probably be crying by the end. I don't know how they do that to reach tiny kids and grown-ups. Like, they hit that button, that nostalgia button, I guess, or the emotion button. I don't know how they do it.
I just don't even understand how little kids process it. So, like, the idea that, you know, like, I liked performing, but I don't know that I knew that performing was performing. But you had been doing theater, like, on stage theater since you were little. So you were, like, aware that, you know, shows were shows, that you were performing a role, that kind of thing. I mean, heck, Shakespeare at 12? Are you kidding me? I didn't understand the Shakespeare I did at 24. Never mind Shakespeare at 12. Like, how did you get into it? And, like, I don't know if you can remember where your mindset was at this point, but, like, did you totally understand what you were talking about? Did you, like, get into this, like, I'm performing a role, so I'm going to do this and that? Like, how did it feel for you, if you can remember?
I think it was just an elevated playing pretend. You know, you can still see kids, and, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this with your three-year-old when he's pretending to be Superman or Woody or Buzz. They are it. Like, tiny kids, when they're on the playground, who I'm Spider-Man, they think, like, they are for that moment. I feel like for me, it was like this elevated, just playing pretend.
Huh.
In terms of Shakespeare, I think it was, they had some script that was, like, slightly translated so that the kids would actually have some more of an understanding of what they were saying.
Oh, God. That's terrible. Not that Shakespeare needs to be obtuse or whatever, but, like, the idea that someone read through it was like, what he means to say is, you know.
It's like, I don't know if you've ever read No Fear Shakespeare, which is the modern day translation. So it'll say, you know, like, forsooth, where art thou? And it'd be like, hey, where are you? And it's a side-by-side.
Oh, yeah. Like the Cliff Notes, but for Shakespeare.
Yeah. And that gets really funny sometimes because, like, as you get into some of the, like, raunchy jokes, it'll say something like, you know, in parentheses, this is a very dirty joke that Shakespeare is making.
Does it just say that? It doesn't tell you what the joke is?
It will, but it's like a preface almost. Yeah. It's like, just so you know what you're about to read.
That's so funny. I legitimately would have leaned hard on the idea of, like, cultural timely idioms. Like, oh, you know, this is how they said, like, hey, man, don't do that to me. But really, it's like about, like, punching somebody in the butt, you know, and it's like, you know, you don't have to say, what's the gist? Like, what does it mean? You know, you know, like we all have phrases that we say that mean something different, and they're terrible things we should not say. But you're like, well, I didn't mean that. I meant this thing, you know.
I meant this. I didn't mean bra. I meant bra.
Yeah. That being said, the other thing that's super funny about Shakespeare, and we can totally get into it, because you are focused on Shakespeare, and that's what your main production is now in your acting career and your producing career. But like, I like to think of Shakespeare like a frat guy who wrote a bunch of really funny like plays for his friends, and they were like, "Dude, you should show them to the other people." And they're like, "What?" No. And they're like, yeah, it's so funny. Just because it's like, we heightened it now, but like, you're right. Oh, yeah. If you read the what it means, it's a very, like, two guys are in a fight, and they're like, no, I'm better. I'm gonna stab you. Yeah, I am. Stab. He stabbed that guy. You shouldn't have stabbed him. I'm gonna tell your dad.
Oh, no!
Like, what is this show about, right? It's like a reality show. And I always think, like, people are making them real highfalutin, but this is kind of like the everyman's stories. They're just in a language we don't speak because, well, we're not from there. Like, you know, what are your thoughts on how Shakespeare plays to the audience and what you get out of it?
It's interesting. When I started doing Shakespeare at the end of, or at the beginning of quarantine, I was just kind of like, oh, it started, no joke, with like, I'm going to get some friends together and we're going to do Midsummer Night's Dream. This was like late March, when there was this new thing called COVID that was shutting everything down. And you're like, wait, the thing that was in China? Oh, okay. Now it's here. Great. Cool. Not good. And then, you know, everything was shut down, and I got some friends together to do Midsummer, and then we did Much Ado About Nothing the next week, and then we did Macbeth, and then so on and so on and so on, and we're almost done with the canon at this point here in it'll be February when people are listening to this, but honestly, what I kind of feel like it's and something that I've been trying to do through this group is really take away all of the grandeur that we put around the text, because there is even if, you know, people aren't going to be or not to be anymore, there's still this sacredness that a lot of people approach it with.
Yeah.
When really, as you were saying, it's just dudes talking. Sometimes they're fighting over a woman. Sometimes they're making sex jokes. Like, I want to, and one of the things I'm trying to do is take away some of the sacredness and just make it conversational. You know, this is how these plays are written. This is how these people are talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, are you doing readings with people who have experience doing Shakespeare, or are you like directing actors for a couple of weeks and then presenting a reading of it with the work done?
Well, so we do it every week, mostly every week, but we usually have one rehearsal, and most of the people who are involved have some experience with Shakespeare, but we've had people who have never done anything with it before. And yeah, it's all read, it's readings, but they've kind of now become like reading/virtual performances. It's kind of a combination. But it's just that's been really interesting too. And to see, like, we've done a lot of like playing with it and been like, okay, well, this weekend we're doing a, Western production of Two Noble Kinsmen. We did do a Western production of one of the lesser known, not as good shows. That was really fun. And everyone was doing accents. But that's been really cool during this time in our lives where we're all stuck at home, if you're smart, then you're not gathering in large groups. And it's been interesting to create all of this. And we've gotten people involved from across the world. Like, there's people from the UK and Russia and Canada who we've gotten in our shows now. people who you know and you never would we never would have connected with otherwise.
Yeah, Zoom theater has really brought together the international community. Like, I have met people from all over the world and just chatted with them. You know, the interesting thing about us all going through this all at the same time is that you can talk to somebody in Russia or India or Norway and be like, hey, man, COVID, am I right? And they're like, yep, stuck in my house with my wife. Like, you know, like it's. Everybody's got the same thing going on, so we have that base reality that we can now become friends on top of, you know? It's like when we all go to college or you all have a job together, the base reality of, like, your work or the base reality of school allows you to connect. Now it's like we all are aware of this thing that's happening, and we can talk to strangers, and we have this thing to be like, hey, how are you? I mean, how are you right now with this? Like, it's not like, and we're able to connect with people. How did the people internationally connect with you?
Friends of friends. It's interesting. I think there are a few, there are about eight Shakespeare groups that are doing similar things that I know of. Around the world. So there's like a couple people in the UK who are doing these Shakespeare readings every week. There are a couple people. There's a woman in Russia who does them every week. There's a guy in New York who's been doing kind of similar things. And so there's been this weird, like, it's the seedy underbelly of Shakespearean Zoom theater. It's not that seedy, I don't think.
I mean, but, as seedy as Shakespeare already was.
And, which can be at moments.
Yeah.
But I think I posted on Reddit at some point very early on. I was like, hey, if anyone wants to join us, we have this Canadian actor, Alex Goldrich, who's done shows with us since April, and he's incredible. And that was just like, because I posted something on Reddit, like, it's like you were saying, it's fascinating because we all have this one thing in common where no one really wants to go out and hang out with their friends in a closed area still. So we're all in our homes, and you know, this goes for everything, like all the Zoom theater that I've seen. It's just amazing how people have gathered together, and even from a international point.
Yeah, it's really bringing people together, especially because, you know, with theater, where we would be in large groups in on stage and stuff, that our industry will be the last to come back. You know, like, it's not going to be the first,
sad.
You know, but it definitely, it'll be the last thing. Once theater is back, we're all right.
It's so sad, Amy. Like,
yeah.
And as much as I've been working on this, like, everybody misses it. I've done a little bit of stuff like that's been filmed and then live streamed. And it was so depressing not being able to hang out with my castmates afterwards and go get a drink with them.
Yeah. Like,
cause that's such a part of it for me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people is community.
Yeah. I used to love, I've done a couple of commercials, and my favorite part is just the hanging out. Like, I'm like, ooh, I get to do a commercial. And the best part is people will be like, I do a lot of stuff where it's like, oh, it's a random drug commercial, or like, oh, it's for this business. And I never see it, right? So my whole experience is just hanging out with the cool people that I get to do, you know, scenes with or not. And just be like, ooh, what do you do? Tell me everything. Oh, do you live in town? Oh, that's so fun. So, I've been lost for my social interaction.
So what commercials are these? I'm curious.
Oh, I mean, like I said, I did one that was like a new diabetes thing that like checked your blood on the fly, and like, and I, all the things that I do these commercials for, I don't always interact with the product, you know, like for a while I did, my first commercials were for Grande Internet, and, they were all just joke commercials. And it was about like the employee of Grande was supposed to help these people who were crazy. And they were like, help me with this. And he's like, okay, but I'm really here to tell you about the internet. And they're like, listen, we get the internet. Help us with the bees or whatever. You know. So most of the commercials I've done have nothing to do with what they are advertising, for sure. And a friend of mine, speaking of commercials during COVID, a friend of mine did a commercial and played all the parts. So it was like, it was about a new computer thing where like there's a person where it was like she's organizing her work using this new app, and then she calls for the help desk, and the help desk is her, but a different costume and a different character she's playing. So they only got one actor, but then they got like two sides of a conversation in that scenario. So she did the whole one side, and then she went and did the whole other side, right? And it was like, wow, that's so wild. Like the things that they are doing to adjust the way that they're trying to figure out how to bring it back. And I feel like film is a lot easier because there you could certainly have fewer people in the room. When you do film, a lot of the work is after. So it's like, yeah, we got three people in the room with these five people who are on in the scene. But the work is after when they then get the footage and they're like, okay. So those people don't all have to be there and whatnot. And they keep the makeup people separate, the costume people separate. Now it's like the village is not super tight. Instead, it's like you walk all the way over there to the makeup tent. And then you walk all the way over there to get your costumes. Because they keep everybody in little spots.
And even that's a little bit isolating, you know, because it's like, but I want to hang out. I want to talk to both people.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, and then actors are separated, of course.
Yeah. And the other thing is they discourage you from like chatting. Like my uncle's an actor and he said that when they're in the makeup chair, they're like, don't talk. Like, don't open your mouth. Don't like, just let them use your face as a canvas. Don't have a conversation and then walk away. So just to keep the like breathing to a minimum, even though it's like we're still breathing in front of each
other. Don't breathe.
Like me having trouble breathing right now. But yeah, I mean, it's been different. But I want to bring it back to you and your experience of Shakespeare. Were you doing Shakespeare full time before that? Is that why you were inspired to do Shakespeare?
So I was, I mean, I've dabbled in it, or I've done quite a few Shakespeare shows. But I was doing a production of, the Glass Menagerie at Pasadena Little Theater, which is, one of the Houston suburbs. And my friend Ulrich Davis, incredible director, I was directing it and I was playing Laura, and we were in tech when the shutdown happened. So we were, it was everything closed March 15th. Yeah. And we were going to open, or it was like maybe March 17th or so. We were going to open the 20th. And I think there were a couple other, some friends of mine too, who were in, who did shows where it literally closed, they closed or were about to open and couldn't. But yeah, you know, I've always been interested in it. I've always had a love for it. But it's interesting. Like I'm not classically trained in it. It's just something that I love. And it's been interesting to also like then connect with people who are classically trained where I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how you speak that speech.
Are you just loosely organizing it and getting people together to do it? Or are you directing it and like leading people through, like you mentioned, the No Fear Shakespeare? Are you like leading people through the script to be like, this is what you're saying, this is what you mean in this moment?
More so now than in the beginning. In the beginning, it was a lot of just, okay, here's our cast, you guys, and then we're going to make it, you know, postmodern. or apocalyptic, and then people showed up and did it. Now that we've kind of that we're so far into that it's not new anymore. Like at the beginning, I was like, a virtual theater. What even is that? Like, imagine if somebody had mentioned virtual theater to you last year, you would have, or in last year, 2019, you would have been like, what is that?
I know. I hated using Zoom previous to it becoming ubiquitous in my life. I refused it. It was a big podcasting thing. I was actually at a podcasting conference when the trouble really started, and I was afraid I was going to be stuck in Florida.
Oh, and that was hit badly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, well, it kind of all was, but yeah, I mean, like, I was worried for a while, and podcasting was, you know, I had gone to a huge conference with hundreds of people.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? I had just come from it. My husband works in conferences, right? We spend all this time with, like, big crowds of people, and he uses, my husband does conventions, they use Zoom, you know, in their meetings and whatnot previous, but I was still a holdout in the podcasting community. People were like, Zoom is good. You should use it. I'm like, I don't know. It's not really my cup of tea. Now it's like, gosh. Ugh,
it's so, barely a company, right?
I mean, I don't even know. Call 2019 self and tell them to buy stock in Zoom. I like legitimately thought about it in March. I was like, should I buy stock? And I should have. But like, just because it was like, how did we all just decide across the earth to use this one thing? And I mean, God bless them. Kudos to the Zoom people for like not only maintaining because like when the earth uses your app, that's some server effort, right? Like the fact that we were all even able to do it is insane, right? So they had to have been like rushing around, plugging in servers and trying to get everything going. Like, do we have the bandwidth for everyone to use this? Like, I don't know, you know?
And this app that
they've done it.
I don't think... And it's amazing. Like, I had never even heard of it until everything shut down. But it's actually a perfect, like, medium. Like, the way that you can kind of play with it and you know, the backgrounds and, you know, people turning their screens on and off to enter or exit a scene. It's kind of perfect.
Yeah, I do love it. I mean, it is fun to see things happen. I've watched a few things. You and I were part of that Magical Lying Hour show, which was a fun one to be part of. And then I've done a few readings with my, I teach private writing classes. And so when they get a script that's fully done, I give them a reading. I get actors together and do a reading for them. And that has been really great to, like, have something that I can give a performance that I can give sort of like a recital for my writing students during this time. And picking up teaching private writing tutorials has been my COVID thing. Like, I was not doing it beforehand, but now I'm like, hey, great. What can I do for you? And now that I've taught a few people, I have a hang on what to do, like how to get people to do their work and how to get people involved and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's really interesting to use Zoom for creating theater. And it is an interesting way to communicate to the audience, right? Like it's like we're all figuring it out, you know, like even the doing the theater, like when you see somebody on a stage, they're far away from you, they're like higher than you, right? But when you're looking at Zoom, it's like democratized, like we are all together in our own little box. Like,
and it's interesting because the way that the medium is kind of, and I'm sure you know, you felt this doing readings too, where it's like this hybrid between stage and film as a medium, because it's, if you're sitting down, it's literally your face and your, like, your neck and maybe chest. Like, it's so close. So there's so many like more intricacies, and I've it's been interesting to see how people have adjusted to that as well.
Yeah, everyone's had to become a tiny film actor.
Yes, yes. Because, you know, in the beginning when we were all new to this, everyone would be really big. And then you see the progression of people like scaling it down and becoming more intimate in moments. You don't have to project because the mic's literally right there.
Yeah, you do. Fascinating. Not. In fact, you shouldn't project.
Because then Zoom, like the sound, it's not a perfect medium at the same time. So if you start yelling, the sound will glitch out.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's like it's always trying to fix, and you've got like 17 different people plugged into Zoom with like different fixes clicked in their settings. So it's like messing, trying to adjust with everybody. It's hard, though, because, like, you'd think yelling would be important, both in theater and meetings. You know, if you're a boss and you're, like, talking to your whole group and you're like, listen, what is going on with
this?
Oh,
God.
I don't know.
Amy, and then there's the other issue, which is people muting themselves. The number of times when I've had, it's people's line, because, you know, I tell everybody, okay, mute yourself and turn your camera off when it's not your turn. And then they keep themselves muted. So it's like then they come on with this amazing, you know, this grand entrance and then open their mouths and I have to click the ask to unmute. or people not muting themselves and going to the bathroom and having conversations with their spouses in the background. I can't wait to get back on stage.
We're all just trying to act with our children very close to us, and it's difficult.
Yes, right?
You know, I wasn't trying to do this. Oh, man. So now that you've done Shakespeare for a while, is it like the thing you're into now? Like, are you going to really dig into doing more Shakespeare even when you can go on stage?
I have felt like there have been so many amazing casts that we've done in this group, including former interviewee, Stephen Salzman's Edward II, which is Marlowe, but he's an incredible, he sells himself short. He's an incredible, like, serious actor, as well as being a hilarious improviser. Aaron, too. Aaron and Stephen were my Rosencrantz and Guildenstern when we did Hamlet. And it was 80s, so they were playing it like Beavis and Butthead, kind of. It was perfect. But we've had so many great casts that I almost want to take some of those casts and put them on stage. But, you know, I love modern stuff, too. It has given me more of an appreciation, especially for, like, the plays that nobody talks about. Like, nobody talks about... we're about to do Love is Labor's Lost on next weekend, and nobody talks about that play. Or we had a great time doing Pericles, which is like a fable, and it's also gotten, I think, helped me, and I hope other people too, be more comfortable with the text, because there is a daunting nature to it. No matter how much experience you have in it, it's still kind of like, oh, God, Shakespeare. There's a reason so many people don't like doing it, because they're like, oh, Shakespeare.
Yeah, man. And you know, you don't want to feel like you don't know what you're saying. So that's why I was asking about, like, are you, like, helping people understand? Or are you suggesting that people have the No Fear Shakespeare with them so they know what they're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always suggest that. Like, I use it, too. Because it's like sometimes you'll see a passage and it's like, I no idea. Or the what's even better is, I think I know what that means. Yeah, I know what that means. And then you look it up and you're like, oh, I completely got that wrong.
Yeah, totally. And it's terrible if you get it totally wrong, right?
Oh, yeah.
What about Titus Andronicus? Have you guys done that one? That's my fave.
Oh, that's fun. So much fake blood.
So much like, terrible things.
Thing is that people can sit there in their home offices and mix Jell-O and Jell-O powder and barbecue sauce and like rub it on their face and, you know, then go wash it off. Like, yes, I love that place. Insane.
Yeah.
It's so dark and almost so much so that it's funny. where it's like people cutting their hands off and then fighting about whose hand's going to be sacrificed. Where it's like, it's so dark and gory that it's almost funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it gets dark 30 seconds in, and then it just goes hard for the whole thing. And you're like, what? Oh, man. So fun. I'm a big fan of the Anthony Hopkins movie.
Oh, yes. That's that was Julie Taymor, I think. Yeah. I loved that.
Beautiful. Really gorgeous.
Oh, she's brilliant.
So tell me, before COVID shut down, you know, Glass Menagerie for you, what have you been doing? We've talked pretty much about you as a child, and then we jumped forward to now. But what's happened in between? Like, what sort of acting have you been involved in previous? Were you doing film, stage? How does navigating the Houston theater scene work for you? Or how did it work for you previous to now?
So I went to, St. Edward's University in Austin for theater, and then came back here afterwards. And, you know, I've started in community theater. I have a great love for it. I still do stuff with community theater. It's, you know, this city, people don't think of it as one of the art cities, but it totally is. The number of theater companies and experience and opportunities that this has for actors and directors and musicians. And I have opera singer friends too. But the number of like just little tiny companies that are popping up every year, it seems, in this city is amazing. And then I did some directing, and it really, like, there's a reason I think so many people have decided to settle here and act here. I've mostly done stage stuff, a little bit of film. I find film really, like, the whole hurry up and wait, at least for me, is a challenge.
Yeah, it's hard.
Because then when it is time to go, you're like, well, I've just been sitting here for 2 hours drinking coffee. So that's a challenge to kind of like work yourself back up into getting into it.
Doing like a full dramatic movie. Like whenever I see that,
oh my God,
it's like, how many times did she have to cry? Like from how many angles? You know, it's almost a blessing, those directors that do the like long shots, because you're like, at least it's done.
I know.
You know?
And you don't have to put your actors through that again and again and again.
That's the interesting thing, is that like we were talking about using Zoom and like looking at the camera, and like I've become a lot more cognizant of how I act when I'm not the one talking. You know what I mean? Because I know that the other person is staring at my face. So I try to give them a lot, because that's all they've got. There's no like scenery or audience or anything. All they have is my face to like keep them in the moment, right? So I've learned a lot more about like face acting, you know, like really just getting into it, showing them what I think and feel. And I feel like that's a great film technique to have developed, because that's like 3/4 of what film actors are doing. Like, think about how many times, okay, we're focused on this actor now. The camera will never look at you, other actor, but you still have to do this scene
with
this person, and this person has to do this deeply emotional scene 5 times, right? So you have to just keep giving them the face, you know, like get them into it, you know? I think it's a skill that hopefully we can take and put into more film in the future. Like, more expressive faces hopefully will litter film for the future.
I was going to say, like, and it's amazing to watch people have, you know, from the comfort of their own homes to watch. And I know we're kind of jumping around a little bit, but it's amazing to watch people from the comfort of their own homes have really intimate moments with people through the screen, or really angry moments with people through the screen, like stuff. And that's something that if you had talked about it in 2018, anyone would be like, that's ridiculous. That's impossible. Like, you can't have a fight scene with somebody when you're not in the same place. That doesn't, because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But it really works.
Yeah. And everybody's so safe. And not just maybe from the COVID, but also from the, you know, potentially not listening to the fight choreographer.
Oh, fair enough. True. True.
I've certainly seen on stage where I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no, we've gone off the rails. Oh, no, what's happening? Bring it back. Don't hurt each other.
Especially as a director, when you're sitting in the audience watching your show, just being like, oh, I know that move was wrong. Oh, and that person's bleeding. Okay, just going to sit here and act like nothing is wrong. Just going to act like nothing. that's an interesting experience.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. Do you think you'll continue doing this Zoom Shakespeare long after the stage comes back? Or are you going to do
I don't know.
Shakespeare?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to just go back to doing... Because, I mean, I've thought about it. I don't know if there will be a need for it. There might be, because I think things are going to go back slowly. But, yeah, at this point, it's just kind of like until... Gosh, what is it? They're talking about the summer when everyone's going to be vaccinated.
I can't.
Exactly.
I don't know. I'm not paying attention.
I know. Is it even worth putting a timestamp on it? Because who knows? It's going to take so long. I think maybe we could still do some stuff like readings, for instance. Like, I don't know about you, but when I go to see a group of reading or a bunch of readings, it can be really taxing sitting and watching people in blacks read a play with their scripts. And I think maybe that would be easier to do online.
I have every intention of continuing to use it for my like online classes. Even if I start doing private instruction in person, I think doing the Zoom reading is really great for multiple reasons. One, I can get actors from all around the world.
That's the thing.
I mean, like, I'm sure you working with the people from Russia and the UK has, like, spoiled you. And now you're like, well, I want everyone from everywhere.
And that's the thing. We're like, when you have people from around the world, it's like, everybody's really, really good. Literally, Lord number one, First Lord and Second Citizen are incredible. Because you have that opportunity to cast really, really, really good people because you have this huge pool of actors to choose from.
Plus, it's like, you know, sometimes you can find somebody who has, like, from my point of view, when I teach people that are trying to write, if they're trying to get a certain character that's from a certain place, or they're trying to this is set in this kind of thing, I try to find somebody who knows about that thing that they're trying to create the world of, so I can be like, hey, what's that like? Can you be the reader for this? And then maybe they're not the best actor, but at the end, I can have them give notes to my student to say, like, oh, you know, this was set in a tech company, but, like, we don't do this at tech companies or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think about... there's so many different shows that are, like, super niche. Super, like, it's this group, you know? The Office is, you know, nobody in a paper company in the world is like, that's not how we do it. But, like, you know, ER, for instance. You're in a hospital, they're going to have a lot of stuff that's like, okay, make sure it looks like this. Because some nurse is watching this and is going to be like, hey... No, you got to do this, right? And why not? Stick to it. Make it real, you know? So it's good to have the freedom to hire different actors, to find actors from different places. And then the other thing about doing a Zoom reading, from my point of view, for teaching, is that, like, after, so I did the reading with my most recent student, and then I thanked everybody for doing, I asked everyone for their thoughts. They gave us their thoughts. And then I said, thank you so much. You can leave the meeting now. And then they left the meeting, and I was able to postmortem with my student right away. You know what I mean? So that it's not like, you know, how like when you do a reading and they're like, the actors are in the room, you can't be like, don't worry, Tina. It's not your, it's not you, your writing that made it bad. It was Ron. He's not.
Yes.
Like, you can't say that, you know? And also, no offense to like the actors either, because like they're literally there for 1 second. They like swing in just to help and then they're gone, right? So it's like, you and I have been working on this script for 6 weeks. We know what this guy is about. If there was a director and actors, of course they would act it with its full emotion. But this guy just read it once. Like, it's still, I mean, now I use Zoom for some podcasting. Not right now, we're on the phone. But like, sometimes I use it. It's a little glitchy. But,
yeah,
you know.
2020 was a weird year.
Yeah. But I like that it inspired you to do this Shakespeare thing. I mean, like, that's pretty awesome. Zoom Shakespeare is a great series that, you know, you were able to put together to give yourself and other people sort of a home during what was really a rough, rough time. Are you at all interested in, like, running your own theater? Or are you just going to be an actor and maybe director when the world returns?
I'd love to take some of what has been done with Zim Shakespeare and bring it onto the stage. It's just the technicality aspect. We're like, I don't know how to run. Like, I know how to do it virtually. I've kind of taught myself a lot about doing it virtually, but I don't know. Like, I would need to get a good, like, business minded person, you know, to do it.
Yeah.
Because, like, how do you, like, what organization do you, what group do you go through to sell tickets? How do you get a liquor license? How do you, like, what are the fire code standards? How about a space? There's so much more and so many aspects of things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, physical space is definitely a lot, for sure, for sure. Now, if you were to give advice to, you know, an actor or, you know, a would-be producer on how to put together their own show or, you know, get it going. You've clearly got an energy behind you, but what would you suggest to somebody who wants to do something similar?
I mean, honestly, we are kind of blessed and cursed with right now where there's no or very little actual theater happening. With, you know, like, you have a medium like Zoom or Google Hangouts or I think, yeah, Google Groups or something like FaceTime, even you could probably do stuff through where you can get a group of friends together and film it, put it on YouTube, or just do it for yourselves. Because right now we're in a time where, like, that literally costs nothing to do.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And again, this COVID thing has brought so much crap to the world and in some ways has made so many people, not just myself, but made so many people, like, work around these current problems and find solutions.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you for, you know, having the strength to put something together. I mean, I know it took me months before I could, like, lift my head up to do anything. So, you know, good on you for getting people together. I'm sure there were people that were like, oh, if only I had someone to hang out with. And you were like, hey, you want to do this Shakespeare thing? And they were like, yay! Well, hey, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been really great to chat with you. And, you know, thanks so much for doing Zoom Shakespeare and sharing it with the world. It's, like, such a service to people. And, you know, I just think it's a really great experience for everyone to, you know, check out something. I also really love this idea that you, like, weren't an expert in Shakespeare or like, yeah, nope, let's do it. Like, that's so amazing. Like, take the lead, do something new. So fun. So thank you, Rebecca, so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Amy. It was really fun. Thank you. Yay.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.